guard. You ruined a perfectly good swing tackle by trying to teach him the techniques of left guard. And then when you tried to shift him back out to left tackle, his mind was so screwed up because he sucked at guard and he knew it. His confidence was gone. And you let Adrian Claiborne sack Dak Prescott 19,000 times, ruin his confidence for the rest of the year. And everything went downhill from that decision that they made in training camp. But I digress. Nah, Dez Bryant called him out with calling him out. He was flat out, man. The scheme sucked. What you gonna do, partner? What you gonna do, partner?
What hell of a sub tweet.
Man, listen here. Okay, so
Lady Hair was over there like at me though.
Factor into, you know, what's gonna happen with Anthony Hitchens. I don't know that he is. I'm teetering. I'll be honest with you. As it stands, I'm teetering.
This year he has 33 targets in the 9 games that he's played, so he's up to 3.7. Le'Veon Bell averages 7 targets
insane.
A game. In 2016, David Johnson averaged 7.5 targets per game.
Insane.
All right, all right. You are now rocking with the best, and thank you so much for tuning in for another episode. And guess what? This is part 2. We're actually coming to you not once, but twice in the same week. Part 2 of our season recap, spin forward look to 2018 here on Catch This Fade podcast. I am, of course, your host, KD Drummond. I am joined by my co-host, the one and only Mr. Patrick Walker. Say hello to the people, Pat.
Ladies and gentlemen, how goes it? What's up, KD?
Man, it is another day of paradise. We already conquered part 1 where we attacked, well, I attacked Rod Marinelli and his worthiness to keep his job in 2018. We both kind of agree that we believe the Cowboys will most likely keep the staff together. There is a chance that they will interrupt some things. You don't want Marinelli to be part of the purge. I do, because I've been on that for the last 3 years. And then we also dove into Dez Bryant and whether or not we felt he was going to take a pay cut. And lo and behold, 2 hours after we finished recording our podcast, Dez Bryant says to the media, hell no, I'm not taking a pay cut. But he might rethink that if the pressure is put on him.
I believe he will. Like I said, I said it on Twitter for everyone. Shameless plug. Follow me on Twitter at Voice of the Star. I said it earlier today. I believe that comment from Dez was in defense of how he's feeling right now. I mean, look at it from his standpoint. I mean, he's been under attack. He had a poor game in a must-win situation, and now everybody in the NFL media fans are all heaping this criticism on him, saying he's washed up. He's in defensive mode, and then arbitrarily here comes this question that's unsubstantiated because the front office has not made any kind of insinuation that they're going to approach him with a pay cut. Right. But here comes an arbitrary question out of nowhere. Hey, are you going to take a pay cut? He's in defensive mode. He reacted. We all know Dez is reactionary. And I think that, once the weeks progress and, March comes around, cooler heads will prevail. And I believe he'll be more apt to, whether it be a pay cut or a restructure, I don't believe he enters 2018 with the same contract. But I believe he stays with the Cowboys.
If you're interested in hearing more about that topic or the Rod Marinelli piece, we talked about Orlando Scandrick. This was before he was put on IR, and the team was apparently getting ready to say goodbye to him. He's gone. But if you want more on that, go check out part 1 of our season-ending recap, our Spin It Forward to 2018, Catch This Fade, available on Audio Boom. We have a new home. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes. Go ahead and do a search on iTunes if you're listening to this on either CowboysWire.com or Dow. I keep saying Dallas 24/7, but it's really Dow 24/7 Sports, right?
There you go. Yep, DAL.247 right. Sports.
There you go. So check out either one of those sites if you're reading this or if you're listening to this on one of those sites. Make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe to the new version of Catch This Fade podcast. There are going to be a couple hits on there. Get the new one with the most recent episode so you won't miss anything. And we're going to be on all of the other podcatchers available very shortly, so stay tuned for that. Blueberry, Blurberry, whatever it's called, Stitcher, all of those things, we're going to get down with that. So, spinning forward, we have a couple new topics to deal with as we want to kind of round out our top 5 that we took a little bit too much time to get into last time. So, Topic number three in our spin forward is the linebacker position. And this is obviously something that is very near and dear to the heart of one Voice of the Star, because the player that everybody in the universe thinks would be an outstanding fit for the Cowboys is the one and only Roquan Smith of Georgia. He's a Georgia Bulldog, the second best Bulldogs on the planet next to Bowie State. He's a Georgia Bulldog, and he is somebody that can obviously help the Cowboys at their linebacker situation. Now, here's the landscape. Sean Lee is the GOAT. We saw what happens when Sean Lee is in the game. They only give up 18 points a game. When he's not in the game, they give up 30 points a game. That kind of differential cannot happen. You can't lose one player and your defense automatically goes from middle of the pack to ridiculously bad. He makes that much of a difference. And again, you know how I feel about Rod Marinelli and this defense. It's not that good to begin with. They're middle of the pack when everything is working out for them. That's the pass rush, the secondary, and the middle line, and the linebackers in the middle of the defense. They need to improve on that. So the question is, what do you do with Sean Lee, Jalen Smith, and possibly a draft pick, which could be Roquan Smith, if all of the stars aligned?
I mean, because you also got to factor into, you know, what's going to happen with Anthony Hitchens. Yeah, I don't know that he is. I'm teetering. I'll be honest with you. As it stands, I'm teetering. Well, clearly we know where you stand on it. But let's assume for the sake of assumption that Hitchens is gone. Which, you know, I'm not even going to rub Hitchens in your face because you know.
Hold up. Are you trying to claim victory 4 years after you proclaimed him to be good? Because he ain't been shit up until 2017.
You know better than that.
I'm gonna let it go.
Yeah. Take that L. But so assuming for the sake of assumption that Hitchens is gone, you're still looking at a situation where obviously you're going to need something to or I should say an adrenaline shot into this linebacker core. Because honestly, I mean, let me take a step back for a second. Whether Hitchens is gone or not gone, you mentioned Sean Lee, the GOAT. We all know the general, one of the best on the planet at playing American football, bottom line. But availability, obviously a question. So even if Hitchens were to remain on, you're still going to need – this is the offseason where you have to find the heir to Sean Lee. It is not up for negotiation. His salary cap hit balloons. I believe it's $11 million next year. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct.
$11 million salary cap hit on Sean Lee, and his availability is a question going forward. He's in his 30s now. Writing's on the wall. It's time to start the transition to someone new. For me, that's a player like Roquan Smith. And again, that is whether or not Hitchens is on the field for the Cowboys. If Hitchens is there, okay, now you're looking at utilizing Roquan Smith as a floater as needed between Sam, Mike, and Will. For the times that Lee will not be on the field, I'm not even going to say if, because it looks like a foregone conclusion. He's going to miss several games each year going forward until he hangs up his cleats. That's when you're going to see Roquan Smith operate in the Will. Being a Dogs fan and knowing what Roquan is capable of, he can float, but he does his best work when he's allowed to roam and destroy as Lee does at the weak side linebacker position. So I believe that that's kind of how you mix him in. He's not going to be, he can be a starter from day one, but that also depends on the progression of Jalen Smith in this offseason to come. Is Jalen Smith going to be the definitive starter next year? As it stands, the answer is yes. But again, bringing someone like Smith, or I should say Roquan Smith, since we're talking Smith versus Smith, bringing someone like Roquan Smith, and then it's really going to be contingent upon, is Lee healthy? How healthy can he be? But nonetheless, if we're talking about a linebacker core that includes Jalen, a healthy 100% Jalen Smith, because his prognosis for his nerve regeneration was 100% by January, give or take a few weeks. A 100% healthy Jalen Smith, Sean Lee fully healthy, Anthony Hitchens, who is playing out of his mind in 2017, and then you give me someone like Roquan Smith, this will immediately be, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, the best linebacker core that the Cowboys have had in recent memory. And off the top of my head, I can't think of one that would be better in franchise history.
You know, I think talent-wise, there's no question about it. That would be the best collection of talent, whether or not Smith is able to make that transition. Not everybody makes that transition, to be a great player for a career. Not everybody has to have that rookie season when they're outstanding. Especially in this defense where the linebackers are asked to do so much. But that's let me circle back around. Let me back that up. The Cowboys' defense is strange under Rod Marinelli in the fact that they love to play nickel, and they really don't have a purpose for their Sam linebacker. They don't blitz him. They don't use it as a, you know, as a fifth defensive lineman as some other teams do around the league. There really isn't a carved out role for the Sam linebacker unless they're in the base defense.
True.
I think that would need to change for them to truly utilize Sean Lee, Jalen Smith, and Roquan Smith, or let me back that up even further, any of these upper-tier linebackers that are available in the draft, because there's a handful of linebackers I think could make an impact for this team. I think Smith is going top 10, and I don't advocate trading up for a guy like that, but there are other guys like Malik Jefferson and the kid from Boise State, and there's actually a plethora of off-ball linebackers I think that could be available in the second round, which would be more so my sweet spot for grabbing a player such as this to join, because let's be honest, the investment the Cowboys made in Jalen Smith and waiting basically 2 years for him to be fruitful, that is they're going to be their primary linebacker. He is the one that they intend to take over the mantle for Sean Lee. If Sean Lee is injured next year, you expect Jalen Smith to be able to move into that role and be the man in the linebacker core. Whether or not he's fully capable of doing that and take on the accelerated snaps, they've kind of already made that bet, and you all know how I feel about it. I didn't approve of the draft pick to begin with because of the fact that he was going to miss 1 or 2 years, and for all intents and purposes, he was effective somewhat down the stretch, but really, he's missed 2 years as far as being a productive player for the Dallas Cowboys. But the interesting spin on that is that because Lee is so injured, three different players played 50% of the defensive snaps for the Cowboys at linebacker. Smith played 57%. Lee played 57%, Hitchens played 52%, and then Damian Wilson, who is a Sam, actually played 32% of the defensive snaps. So there's really 800 snaps or so that could be absorbed by a new player into this Cowboy linebacker core. So while on one side of my equation I say it would be overkill to go and get another linebacker unless you're ready to jettison Sean Lee and basically say you're done with it, because you have to be so concerned about his injury situation, knowing he's going to miss games, because you still have to be concerned about whether Jalen Smith can give you a full season or not, I'm actually not opposed to bringing in another off-ball linebacker, even though the position isn't that important in today's NFL.
I agree with you on most of your points. The only point that I would disagree on is I believe that, all things being considered, this was in fact a productive season or a productive rookie, quote unquote, debut for Jalen Smith. If you, especially if you look at the progression, the arc of his 2017 and how he improved. And yes, he had some coverage issues early on, kind of sealed that up a little bit, or I should say to a good degree, but they're still out there for right now, which makes sense. Again, he was a rookie for all intents and purposes. But that's the only point I would disagree on. But I'm completely with you on the fact that if you look at everything in its totality, the concerns over the health of Sean Lee going forward, what that does to the Cowboys defense when he's not on the field, question marks still surrounding, you know, Jalen Smith, no longer the health, presumably he'll be 100%. And if that's the case, he still has that that learning curve, because he will be going into his second year for the most part,
right,
as far as playing on the field. And then what do you have outside of that? Because again, let's assume Hitchens is not there. What do you got? You got Damian Wilson, which is a good talent, but he did not deliver in 2017 like we all thought he would coming out of training camp. You look at someone like Kyle Wilbur, you know, for as it stands, career backup. It stands to reason that, although on its face you can look at the Cowboys depth chart, look at those names and say, oh, well, the Cowboys don't need to add another linebacker. That's overkill. They can wait until round 3 or 4 to make that happen. I wholeheartedly disagree. I think it is one of the top needs of the team. So whether it be Roquan Smith or some of the other names you mentioned, I believe it has to happen this offseason, or they're going to pay for it again in 2018.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys have three basic needs going into this offseason. Wide receiver, which we covered in the first part. They need to have a complement to Dez Bryant. As long as Dez Bryant is still there, they need to have that speed merchant opposite to try to take the top off of defense and dictate some of the coverages that he and Cole Beasley are seeing, because with no threat to basically expand where Dak Prescott could be throwing it, everybody kind of just throttles down, comes in closer to bracket coverage. Cole Beasley has somebody over the top of Dez Bryant, and there's nobody to make them pay for doing those sorts of things. So that's number one priority that the Cowboys need to address this offseason, get some speed on the offensive side of the ball. I would put linebacker at number 2A, and then I would put weak side defensive end as 2B, because I want speed off of that size. I know that they love to have run-stuffing ability on both the weak side and the strong side, but get me the type of guy that can threaten the left tackle with speed so that they have to dedicate a running back or tight end to chip that guy, even though they have their elite left tackle over that side. And I think this defense goes from really good to outstanding if you add those elements. So I'm all for going linebacker in day one or day two.
And to that point, I believe that the Cowboys are right there with that assessment of their needs. I think that they have a defensive line pick as it stands. Obviously, we have months and, you know, before the draft actually happens, and so much can change between now and then. But as it stands, heading into the new year, the Cowboys, from what I can tell and from the whispers and reading the tea leaves and even some comments that were made by Stephen Jones, they're looking at defensive line as the top priority. Now, whether that's a defensive end or whether that's a big body one-tech nose tackle, which we all know they are in dire need of, that remains to be seen. But right there, and I agree with you as far as 2A, I'll go with linebacker there, but I'm kind of up against the wall trying to figure out how much I believe the Cowboys need to find that deep threat opposite Dez Bryant. And however I feel about that, which I'm not completely solidified in, that's what's in my head. Like, do I take a linebacker over that? Probably yes. Gun to my head right now, I gotta go yes, because you pay Terrence Williams to be that guy. You would like to believe he'll become that guy, but he's only shown flashes of it though thus far in his 4-year career. Nothing, you know, invokes enough confidence within me to say, okay, well, suddenly he's going to become that guy in 2018. So kind of up in the air there mentally.
Yeah, I can see your apprehension on that. We had that discussion, or we had part of this discussion in the first part of the preview for 2018, and what we're going to do with Dez Bryant. If he doesn't take the pay cut, do you release him? Do you go out and then have to find both an X receiver and a speed receiver? Do you have both of those on your plate in free agency / draft? But along with that, I think one thing that could very much so help the Cowboys offense return to glory and have some diversity in it is what they do with Ezekiel Elliott. I sit here and I watch all of these players excel. I saw David Johnson in 2016. I've seen Le'Veon Bell for the last 3 years, Alvin Kamara and Joe Mixon, and all of these prototypes of guys that can do both run the rock between the tackles, but also go out into routes and run them as receivers. I have no doubt in my mind that Ezekiel Elliott is capable of doing that.
Absolutely.
But the Cowboys don't want to do that. And I think it's twofold. I think one of the things is they value so much Elliott's pass blocking that if they're going to have him on the field when it's a passing play, they'd rather have him in. But for me, having him go out and run those plays and the defense having to be cognizant of his ability on doing those things outside of just a screen pass or, you know, a flare out or something of that sort, the diversity of his route tree, I think, would go a long way to opening up other parts of the offense. And for whatever reason, the Cowboys just don't seem to want to do that.
Which is weird, considering that he has the skill set to make that happen. Ezekiel Elliott has the skill set to become what Le'Veon Bell is to the Steelers as far as his in relation to the Cowboys. And you've seen glimpses of this. I mean, you're talking about a guy who takes a screen pass and goes, you know, 72 yards
you
to
would
the touchdown.
Think that would lead to more passing opportunities.
And I mean, not just that. I mean, he's had a run like that now this year and one, obviously, when he broke the Steelers back last year. So this is a guy who is in Ezekiel Elliott who can get the job done in the receiving game as much so as he can with his legs in the run game. But the Cowboys, for whatever reason, and this goes back to you're talking about Rob Marinelli. I'm talking about Scott Linehan, man. It infuriating, maddening.
Yeah.
And it,
yeah.
You know, revisiting a point that I made in our inaugural 2017 Catch This Fade podcast when we were, you know, comparing these guys to characters in Stranger Things, and I literally said about Scott Linehan, he is one of the brightest minds that I've seen, but he's too smart for his own good. He's so smart that he's overconfident, and he feels like the 3, 4, 5 plays that he consistently runs is going to continue to fool NFL teams season in and season out. Yes, it worked in 2016 because teams didn't have film on Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. But when it came time to make the adaptation in 2017, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. And one of those adaptations has to be Ezekiel Elliott being utilized more in the receiving game to keep these defenses honest. Because until that happens, you're going to keep running into the same problem while you're trying to figure out why you keep running into the same problem. It's a maddening cyclical effect that Linehan seems to be stuck in. And if the Cowboys choose not to move on from him in 2018, he's going to have to make changes to his scheme. And if he didn't plan on it before this week, he has no choice now because Dez Bryant called him out without calling him out.
Nah, Dez Bryant called him out with calling him out. He was flat out, man. The scheme sucked. What you gonna do, partner? What you gonna do, partner?
What hell of a sub tweet.
Man, listen here. Okay, so
Linehan was over there like, at me though.
I don't think people, and yeah, that was the worst part about it, that Linehan came out and he was like, I haven't heard any of these complaints. Bruh,
what?
Calling yourself tone deaf is not really the look that you want to go
willfully
with into this
deaf.
Whole offseason.
Willfully
bruh.
Deaf. Yeah, right, willfully so, deaf. He heard him. He's hearing it.
So here's my thing, just to put some numbers behind what we're talking about. Ezekiel Elliott's targets increased this year. He had 39 targets in 15 games last year, so that's less than 3 a game. This year, he has 33 targets in the 9 games that he's played, so he's up to 3.7. Le'Veon Bell averages 7 targets a game. In 2016, David Johnson averaged 7.5 targets per game.
Insane.
So that's taking all of the screenplays that Elliott's running and adding to it motioning him outside. Now, the Cowboys motion Elliott outside, but for the most part, it's just to make the defense declare what they're doing as far as man and zone defensive schemes. They motion him out there, and then they'll either have him just sit there and run a quick out, or they'll bring him back in once the defense has declared that they're playing man coverage. So I need them to put him on the outside, line him up out there, make the defense declare, and then actually still run routes with him. I don't see what the holdup is, because based on what we know of him at Ohio State, it's possible for him to do this. We know he has great hands. So I would just like to see them try this more. Now, obviously, I put the caveat in there. These coaches see these players in practice. We don't get to see that. Maybe they try this stuff in practice and it doesn't look that good, so they don't bring it to the game. That's entirely feasible. However, try it in a game. And even if the fact is that they're not doing it well in practice, try it in a game and see what happens, because you're stifling yourself by not even trying to bring that to the table when it matters most.
Absolutely. I mean, and to your point, we're not there in practice. I mean, the media is only allowed a few moments before it's shut down, and then we don't know what happens after that. And the coaches, they have the inside track. Now, that being said, what we do have is game film on Elliott, both as an NFL player and within his days with the Ohio State Buckeyes. And we know for a fact that that is a dimension of his game that is present and that has not been utilized up to this point. Like you said, they use him more so for a decoy than anything else when they motion him out. And they really just need to get to stop being overconfident with their current playbook. Now, whether that means opening up the playbook more or if it means completely doing away with it and installing a brand new updated playbook that utilizes him and several other players in a much more productive capacity, whatever needs to happen, it has to happen, because the bottom line is you're not going to convince me that you let a player like Lance Dunbar go for several reasons, one of which being his unavailability. But one of the reasons they let him go, as we all know, no matter how they spin it, is because they believed that Ezekiel Elliott can also be productive in the pass game.
Exactly.
Okay, that being said, Dunbar is gone. Where's this utilization of Ezekiel Elliott in the aforementioned pass game? That is what I mean when I say it's kind of maddening to try to figure out why the obvious is not being taken advantage of. And the only thing I can come to, the only conclusion I can come to, is because they're overconfident and they feel like, hey, we're going to continue to beat these teams with this, these same five or six plays in different variations. The jig is up. The jig is up.
Yeah, it is. Now, one of the things, and sorry, of course, you're rocking with the Catch This Fade podcast. I'm your host, KD Drummond. Find me on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL. And of course, you can find my co-host, Patrick Walker, on Twitter at Voice of the Star. Make sure you're following us for all the latest and greatest news, breaking news, analysis, updates, everything that you could possibly want. We got you covered here on this podcast, as well as on social media and on our respective sites. One of the things that we talked about with Ezekiel Elliott that is a plus and might be a reason why they don't send him out into routes from the wide receiver positions more is his pass blocking prowess. Now, it wasn't on display against Seattle because he completely looked like he had missed the last six games. He didn't know what he was doing. He didn't know what he was doing to try to pick up the blitz against Seattle, and that cost them dearly in that game. But outside of that, before he was sidelined with that garbage suspension from the NFL, he was one of the best pass blitz pickup artists at the running back position in the NFL. And we can completely assume that will return once he gets his feet back under him for the 2018 season. Mm-hmm. The reason that's so important is because, let's be honest, while the Cowboys, when healthy, are a dominant run-blocking team, they are simply above average, and I say that with air quotes, when it comes to pass blocking. They are not middle of the pack. They are still in the upper echelon of teams when it comes to pass blocking, but they aren't elite at it. Part of that had to do with the transition that they made at left guard and at right tackle. They brought in, Jesus Christ, they had Chaz Green at left guard. We're not even going to get into the fact that everybody should be fired for that experiment. You need to fire everybody for moving Chaz Green from a swing tackle to being a left guard. The move to Lyle Collins to right tackle, I can get down with. But Chaz Green as a guard, you ruined a perfectly good swing tackle by trying to teach him the techniques of left guard. And then when you tried to shift him back out to left tackle, his mind was so screwed up because he sucked at guard and he knew it. His confidence was gone. And you let Adrian Claiborne sack Dak Prescott 19,000 times, ruin his confidence for the rest of the year. And everything went downhill from that decision that they made in training camp. But I digress.
No need to digress, because also to that exact point, keep in mind the decision to put Chaz Green at left guard not only was a detriment to Chaz Green himself, but it also kind of set the Cowboys back to, you know, versus where they could have been had they started Jonathan Cooper from day one.
Exactly.
So they kind of shot themselves in the foot. So, yeah, no need to digress. I can't let you do that, bro.
Continue. Yeah, no. I mean, honestly, people talk about decisions that have a domino effect, and I've written several articles with what I call the butterfly effect. It's one minor thing that you think is unimportant that has a ripple effect on everything. Their delay in getting Jonathan Cooper ready to play left guard and making that decision early in camp, this experiment that they had with Chaz Green, it truly did affect everything throughout the season. The play early on in the year when the offensive line wasn't set, I think would have been much better if they had just announced that Cooper was going to be the guy and let him get all of the reps with the first team through training camp. Then the whole way that they ruined Chaz Green, so when they had the injury to Tyrone Crawford, Green wasn't capable of coming in and doing the same job he did in 2016 as a fill-in, and that in turn ruined Dak Prescott's season because he never recovered when he lost to Ron Smith. Our friend Marcus Mosher put up the stat on Twitter. The difference in passer rating was like 40 points between when Dak had Teron in there and when he didn't, when he was out injured. That was mostly on Chaz Green. And you saw that, like I said, he never recovered. It took him four games to get himself together and get rid of the yips from looking over his shoulder, scared that he was going to get blindsided by Adrian Claiborne, even though Claiborne was on the other side of the country playing in a different game. He was that nervous over what happened. He was that nervous over what happened. And it was
shell-shocked.
Yeah, exactly. He was shell-shocked. He had the yips. It was sad.
Had the yips. Nice. But, I mean, and you was, you know, as well as those that follow me, I've been beating that Jonathan Cooper drum since spring.
Yeah.
So to see them completely ignore the obvious, and again, how many times are we going to talk about the Cowboys coaching staff ignoring the obvious? We just talked about Ezekiel Elliott's, you know, non-utilization in the pass game. That's ignoring the obvious. Here we are again on the same side of the ball offensively talking about something that's obvious that went ignored, that set the team back unnecessarily, because had they chosen Cooper to start committed to that, the fluidity would have already been there. The gelling, the chemistry would have already been there on the offensive line, but they didn't choose to do it. Now we have to talk about it. That's what we're doing. But the team does need to improve their pass protection, to your original point. They have options to do that. Going into the draft, they're going to have to look at, because we all, Tyron Smith now, he's not yet where Sean Lee is as far as age and having to worry about the heir of Tyron Smith. I'm not quite there yet.
Not yet, but it's coming.
Not quite there yet. But that being said, you're still going to have to figure out something in the realm of offensive line depth. Someone who can, you know, whether it be a strong backup left guard, because I believe that you got to go ahead and give Cooper this extension. You got to give him an extension. Let him remain at starter and left guard. But you're going to need something backing him up, someone backing him up. Chaz Green is not the answer there, obviously. Chaz Green is also not the answer as a backup swing tackle anymore, in my opinion. He could prove me wrong, but I think for him now it's more mental than anything, because they let him get completely aired out in Atlanta. We'll see
They ruined somebody with already low confidence. So
yeah, so we'll see how he bounces back, or if he, you know, even remains with the team going forward. We'll see how that shakes out. But whether he's here or not, they're going to need to address that. I mean, you have players like Connor Williams in Texas, coming out of Texas. He can be a viable option. Someone like Mike McGlinchey out of Notre Dame. Obviously, we know offensive lineman from Notre Dame. It's worked out recently. So, I mean, that's an option as well. And McGlinchey, he could be a good second-round grab for the Cowboys. So, you know, they could still get, whether it be a linebacker or wide receiver in the first round, defensive lineman in the first round, and they could still have the option of a solid backup lineman who could have the ability to ascend to a starting role in the next 2 to 3 years. And then in the next 2 to 3 years, that's when the window on Tyron Smith shifts to finding that heir. But now guess what? You probably already got him. So I think now's the time to go ahead and at least make a step in that progression, or in that direction.
Yeah, I don't see the Cowboys going offensive line early, just simply because they have so much invested in that position, and they do have these other needs that have popped up. The guy that I target oftentimes in my mock draft starting in round four is Brandon Parker. He's a big dude out of North Carolina A&T. I really like that kid. Again, I'm not an offensive line guru or anything close to it. I put on some YouTube clips and I go with that. So, you know, I don't want to sit here and profess that I have the magic key when it comes to selecting offensive line. And I find some guys, I watch a little bit of film, and I like this guy, Brandon Parker. I like his story even more. And I think that he would fit in that mold of somebody they can get starting on day three, especially with these compensatory picks that they have. Grab a guy like that. You know, the guard position. The guard position is going to spill over into the fourth round. And I think it's a pretty good year when it comes to the guards and tackles that are going to have to convert to guards. So I would like to see them grab a guy at both positions. Get the swing guy, get the backup for Jonathan Cooper that could eventually take over for him in 2 years, because Cooper probably has 2 years of starting skill left. He's a guy that I don't have a need to replace him. We all know Cooper was my guy. He was probably my first draft crush when I started covering the Cowboys. So I'm ecstatic to see him excelling with the Cowboys after being bounced around the league so often. I'm good with him between Teron and Travis Frederick for the next couple years. Can he be upgraded? Yes. Does he need to be upgraded? Not really. I'm good with letting him maintain the position and then grooming somebody behind him that can basically be a swing interior player between guard and center. Now,
yeah, that makes sense, because then you have someone like Quentin Nelson also out of Notre Dame. You got somebody like Braden Smith out of Auburn. I mean, the options for offensive guard are there. And to your point, you don't have to go as high as two, because you could, you know, perceivably be in round 4 or 5 and still have a very quality lineman there waiting for you. And the Cowboys have done well, to their credit, in the past 2 seasons now in getting those late round steals. So I have some confidence that they'll be able to, you know, make the right decision there.
Now, here's the point that I wanted to get to the most. And again, it circles back to your bigger point of this offensive philosophy and scheme and how they've gone wrong. The Cowboys refuse to shuffle their offensive line. When Tyron Smith goes down, How the hell is Zach Martin not being pushed out to one of the tackle positions? He is by far a better option. I would much rather have Zach Martin being moved to the outside and playing tackle and shifting it. I know they say the Cowboys' philosophy is they don't want to upset two positions for one injury. Screw all right. that. Get your best five offensive linemen on the field. It is a travesty that you have somebody. The best offensive lineman in the entire league, in my estimation, is Tyron Smith. Number two or three is Zach Martin. And you're telling me that you have no inclination to push him outside and let him get some of those tackle snaps when you were trotting out Chaz Green and Byron Bell and getting Dak Prescott killed? You're idiots.
To be fair, if you look at it this way, right? No one's saying they didn't have the inclination because we don't know whether they did or did not. All we can say is whether they made the move or they did not make the move, and as we know, they did not make the move. I can't wrap my head around why they wouldn't have at least given it a shot for a short period of time to see how it was working out, because like you said, any iteration of Zach Martin is light years beyond Chaz Green. I don't know that I would say the same about Byron Bell in the tackle capacity as far as protecting the edge, just because I've personally, let me know if you have ever, I've never seen Zach Martin protect the edge. And we both know it's a much different beast on the edge than it is when you have guys left and right. That would be my only concern. And Byron Bell, he's been more than serviceable after they finally brought him in into the Falcons game, ice cold. You know, at that point,
Byron Bell has been just as bad as Chaz Green, bro.
I disagree. That's saying a lot, sir. And now I'm not prepared to. Okay. I'm not prepared to concede to that. He's been as bad as
Chaz
better.
Green if Chaz Green had a spine. Okay, you're got
me. He's been substantially better than Chaz Green. You and I have been better than Chaz Green sitting here talking. Okay.
My three year old belly bumping me before we recorded this podcast did better than Chaz Green.
Yeah. So let's not reach, you know, and say that. But I will say that giving Zach Martin a look on the edge was at least warranted, particularly coming out of the Atlanta game. If there was no other game that should have made the Cowboys want to at least experiment with that on the heels of the Falcons debacle, that was it. But once I saw that they weren't going to make that experimentation in the following game, I knew that was that ship had sailed. It sailed. So, like you said, Cowboys don't like upsetting two positions to resolve one, because if you put Martin out on the edge, who are you putting, you know, at that guard position? You're going to put Chaz Green there now?
No.
You're going to put Byron Bell?
No, you're going to put Looney there, and I think actually Bell would probably be better on the interior, or you could play Looney, like I said. You could bring
but
up
that's
one of these.
A lot of confidence in Looney, sir. That's a lot of confidence in Looney.
To my point, Chaz Green is likely number 10 out of 10 offensive linemen they have. So moving Martin over and putting somebody else, even
should
if
be
they're
11
number
out of 10.
Eight, exactly. So let's say that Joe Looney is your seventh best offensive lineman or eighth best, I would much rather have Martin on the outside protecting Prescott's blind side and having his replacement level guy going in to fill in for him than what they did with having Chaz Green out there. Now I understand their mentality. I'm not completely opposed to it. But when you see that what your plan B isn't working, you have to be able to get off the block and go to plan C. You have to be able to try it.
I agree with that.
That's it. So for me, the Cowboys have to go out. They have to draft a couple offensive linemen. They have to replace some of these guys that they have on their roster right now. I know that they brought up Kadeem Edwards. We'll see what he can do. Looking forward to seeing him. And remember back in the preseason, there were promising guys on the offensive line. It was like one or two, I believe, Burbank was another one, and Nate Thiaker. I don't even know if he's still on the practice squad. I believe he is. But I'll have to look that up. But there were promising guys that we saw during the preseason that warranted a closer look that I hope we get to see against Philly in Week 17, especially knowing that Toronto ain't there. Get Dak the hell out of there. Go sign. Is Kellen Moore in the practice squad? Activate him. Let him take the second half. Because I don't even want Cooper Rush to risk getting injured.
I know. Yeah, I agree. I know that statement made you itch, though. I know that statement made you itch, though.
I don't even know how he's still in the league. But, I mean, look, I mean, look, if he's there, you know, you let got, him be a crash test dummy.
But I mean, valid points. I don't understand this. Oh my God, my head's going to explode just simply talking about what we're talking about right now. The fact that the Cowboys are willing to play their starters. Okay, now I'm hoping this is simply gamesmanship. Although there's no need for it because the Eagles don't care. So I've said this and I've beat this drum and I'm going to beat it until the skin falls off my hands. Sit your starters, because what you're risking is not nearly worth the reward. The only thing you can be rewarded with here, if by playing your starters and winning this game, is a moral victory, and you prevent the sweep against Philadelphia. But what you just did was risk long-term injury to players, and you lost. You lowered your draft stock. You lowered your draft pick at the same time. Doesn't make any sense to me. Someone said to me on Twitter, you know, Pat, well, these guys are paid millions of dollars to go win the game. Agreed. So are the backups.
So are the backups, exactly.
So are the backups. You're paying guys on your practice squad as well. These are guys that you're trying to evaluate over the course of the year. You have now an inconsequential game. It's an NFL regular season game. Perfect time to get those guys on the field. Just like you shut down Tyron Smith. Just like you shut down Orlando Scandrick. Shut down Ezekiel Elliott. Shut down Dak Prescott and get some of these guys in there. You just brought up Kadeem Edwards. Bring up someone like Jaron Jones, the offensive tackle sitting on the practice squad. Let me see what Marquez White, the rookie sixth rounder cornerback from this previous draft. Let's see what he has to offer. Let's get, you know, Trey Williams in there. Let's get him running some plays, because you're going to need to know if he's worth an insurance spot going forward. Right. You have a lot of decisions to make, and those decisions need to start being made as soon as Monday. Why not go ahead and make these changes? It's mind-boggling. I don't know. There is no logic for it to me. And Jerry Jones said on 105.3 FM, The Fan, earlier today that, you know, 9-7 is more important to him than and the higher draft pick from 8-8. And we all know. You know me. You know me, brother. You know I do not tank. I don't subscribe to that. I don't. What I'm simply saying is, if you look at the entirety of all the variables, pull those damn starters out of the game. Don't let them play a single snap. Get some of these younger guys in. Evaluate what's deeper into your depth chart and on your practice squad, so that when, as soon as next week, you can really start looking back and making more educated decisions about each position on the team. But they don't want to do that. Just like they didn't want to put Martin at the edge, just like they didn't want Ezekiel Elliott catching too many passes out of the backfield. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I know. I know what it is. This whole coaching staff and this front office got to catch this fade, because we are sick and tired of this rollercoaster ride. Sick and tired of being sick and tired. That's it, man. We're out of here. You know what it is. I'm KD Drummond. That's my co-host, Patrick Walker. Find us on Twitter. He's at Voice of the Star. I'm at KD Drummond NFL. Every week throughout this offseason, we're going to be coming to you with more and more. You know what it is. We've kind of fine-tuned and focused in on some things that had to be talked about, but we're going to return to our regularly scheduled mode for Catch This Fade, the fun stuff, making fun of people, clowning everybody, but we had to talk about the serious business. So make sure that you tune in next week for the next episode. Pat, say goodbye to the people, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, thanks for tuning in. This has been part two of Catch This Fade, the end of the year edition. Everyone be safe out there. Hope everyone enjoyed the 2017 season, even with the ups and downs. At the end of the day, we still only have one more Cowboys game before we have to wait until August. So enjoy it as much as you can. We will see you guys soon, and we'll start talking about some draft prospects, offseason moves, and things of that nature. KD, as always, brother, it's been a blast.
You know what it is, man. Salute.
Salute. Turn me up some. Yeah.
on elbows. Timberland boots, Air Force, and shell toes. Who the fuck is this? If I gotta pay to get in the club, I'ma go pop the trunk and turn the street volume up to 10. I ain't on the guest list, I ain't VIP. I snuck in the exit, learning DIP. My dress code is all black when I'm making the moves. Similar to the new PlayStation 2. I can't help it if the club only packing a G. And the fire marshal wanna shut it down at 3. And you ballin' ass. Just dressed to kill, but a hole showing the toes with extra heels. Man, I gotta get in. I drove here with a car loaded, charged on Belvedere. My niggas hit the cells, so the line is thick. So I drive the 500 through the door to bitch.
Yo, Red, what's up, man? Hey, they ain't trying to let you get in the club.
No,
yo, DJ Kool's in rescue. We gon' break this joint down, man. Hey, yo,
can't get in the club.
And you're pumping this one in your truck.
Let's get dirty.
Say, let's get dirty.
Let's get dirty.
And you really don't give a what.
Let's get dirty.
Say, let's get dirty.
Let's get dirty.
Everybody get your hands up.
Let's get dirty.
Say, let's get dirty.
Let's get dirty.
You ain't gonna party.